You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Ed Mead was a young political activist in the 1960s and 70s. As his frustration with the U.S. political system grew, he joined the George Jackson Brigade. They were a guerrilla group that blew up public buildings and robbed banks to finance their operations. Mead was eventually caught and sentenced to a 30-year and a 40-year prison term. While in prison, Mead turned to legal advocacy. He fought against isolation units and overcrowding in prisons. He helped found Prison Legal News, a publication focusing on different aspects of the prison system. As an inmate, Mead witnessed firsthand one of the most disturbing trends to occur in American culture, the phenomenal growth of the prison industrial complex. When Mead entered the prison system in 1976, there were about 250,000 inmates across the United States. When he was released from prison 18 years later, that number had climbed to just over 1 million. A decade on, and that number has risen to 2.3 million, a tenfold increase in just over 30 years. Ed Mead has remained politically active, editing the magazines Prison Art and Prison Focus. He joins me by phone from his home in Washington State. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
So what is behind this increase in the number of prisoners in U.S. jails?
Well, one of the problems is the whole idea of prosecutors public officials, legislators, and stuff like that wanting to appear as if they're doing something and getting tough on crime is just an easy way to move that process forward for them. There was a study just released by the Pew Center on the States. It shows that 7.3 million people, that's 1 in 31 U.S. adults, are now locked up or on parole or probation. There's laws like the three strikes law. If you have two previous strikes, if you commit a nonviolent felony, like one guy stole some chocolate chip cookies from a supermarket, was third striked for it. And a third strike in California is 25 to life. You have to serve 25 years before you're even eligible.
And how much is this expansion of the prison industry costing?
Over the past two decades, the state's general fund spending on corrections has more than tripled, up to $68 billion a year. So that's a lot of money that... The problem, with prison systems as a whole is the exclusive focus on punishment to the neglect of any kind of rehabilitation, any kind of treatment. And, I mean, it's prison construction doesn't keep up with the number of prisoners that they're sending in. And as a result of this, overcrowding takes place, and experiments with rats, psychologists have done has demonstrated that overcrowding really has some bad effects. So the bottom line is, when you take someone and lock them in a cage smaller than your bathroom with someone else that they've never had any contact with before in their life, and essentially poke sticks at them day in and day out for months, for years, and 90% of these people are released at some point. And when they get out, they're just, they're full of rage, they're anger. And they take it out on their wives, their children, their neighbors, the community. The California's reported recidivism rate is 70%, although I think it's there are statistics that say it could be high as 83%.
Is rehabilitation even possible in the current system with so much overcrowding?
No, it isn't. I mean, it is as a result. California is in a financial crisis, not unlike General Motors, and this has been coming up on them for a while. And so, one of the things that they say, well, maybe we should focus. This just isn't working. I mean, if you had a factory that created a product that had a 70 to 83% rejection rate, wouldn't you start thinking about, maybe it's time to take another approach to this, you know, our quality control or whatever, you know, so that we're now producing all these defective products. And that's the same way with the prisons. And so California came to this conclusion, and so the California Department of Corrections a couple of years ago was renamed the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. But nothing has changed on the inside. And this is like history repeating itself. Back in the 1950s, there was a wave of prison riots across the United States. And so they decided, okay, well, just get tough on crime stuff and harsh punishment just isn't working. So let's go for rehabilitation. And so wardens became superintendents, guards became correctional officers, prisons became, penitentiaries became correctional facilities. But that's all that changed, is the names, and that's the same thing in California. So no, they can't. They've built themselves into a box, and there just isn't anything they can do. For example, the unemployment rate is really high nationally in the United States, and I guess up there in Canada too. So how are you going to find jobs for these people that come out? And that's the essential thing. And what needs to be, I was active in San Francisco until recently when I moved up here to Seattle. And there's a group down there called All of Us or None, which is a multiracial organization, black-led, of ex-convicts. And they're politically active on the outside in a number of ways to further the rights of prisoners and ex-prisoners. Now, if there were a community of ex-offenders like that on the outside and communities of prisoners that could work together and provide jobs for people coming out and integrate them into a community where they're watched over by their peers, this would be a revolutionary concept, because these people would be involved in political activity. And the point I want to make is that the mess is so bad that nothing short of a radical transformation of existing class relations is going to resolve it.
I understand that when you were in prison, you started a computer programming course for prisoners. As an alternative model, how did that work?
That's a very good example. So I'm in this prison in Washington State, and I've always published some kind of newsletter, and a prisoner-oriented newsletter. And in doing this, I would use a typewriter and do my columns. And if I had to move stuff around, I would have to cut a paragraph out of the column and paste it over here. And the same way with my mailing list. I thought it was very high tech because I had these sheets of mailing labels that could be photocopied done that way. But anytime somebody dropped from the list or I added somebody from the list, which was zip sorted, I had to, you know, cut and paste and use whiteout. And it was quite a task just keeping the mailing list up to date. So I'm sent to this prison in Washington State. And they tell me either I have to work, and they put me in a hole, and they tell me either I have to work or go to school in order to get out. So I said, okay, I'll go to school. And I looked over the classes that they had, and one of the classes was computers. And so I, you know, okay, well, I don't want to work for these people, so I'll take a class in computers, whatever they are. And I got into the class and discovered word processing, where I could just cut and paste electronically, and all the columns would realign themselves, and it was incredible. And I learned database management, and that was, I couldn't believe the ease of which I could maintain a mailing list now. And this was on something called an old Radio Shack, a Tandy Radio Shack that ran something called TRS-DOS. I mean, it was just really old. This was back in the 80s, early 80s. And so when I went to this class, I discovered this stuff, and I'm just amazed. And I take all the computer classes I can take, and that isn't enough. So I sign up for more. I mean, I sign up to be the teacher's assistant, and I get that. And so I'm in a computer class all day long. I'm helping other prisoners learn computers and doing my own studies more. But that still isn't enough. So I start driving on the prison administration to allow me to have a personal computer in my cell at my own expense. And they laugh, har. And I take it up and up higher and up higher, all the way to the head, all the way to the chief of the Department of Corrections, and he shoots me down. I start all over again from the bottom with better logic and written proposals. And every time a tour comes through with some big DOC official, all, you know, like latch on to their leg like a bulldog and, you know, ask them how, why, just give me a reason why. And finally, one of them says, okay, submit a draft policy statement and I'll review it. And I did, and he did, and personal computers were approved for prisoners. So, at our own expense. So, ultimately, 52 prisoners had personal computers in their cells. And we started a computer users group called PUG, Prisoners User Group. And part of what we did was keep track of those prisoners who had personal computers who were released. And we were only, before I got transferred, we were only able to do that with 20 prisoners. But out of that 20 prisoners, not a one of them returned. They'd started their own businesses doing computer repair or went to work for somebody doing computer-related work. For the last 10 years, I've been working in San Francisco as the computer systems manager for a company there, making $75,000 a year. All this at no cost to the taxpayer, no recidivism, everybody employed, paying taxes, everything is good. Politicians start complaining about hug-a-thug, that the prison system is being soft on criminals, allowing them to have personal computers in their cell. And so after 3 years of this program, they yanked the computers. There's an example of a program created by prisoners for prisoners that was successful, that cost the taxpayers nothing, and yet they shut it down because it appeared as if we weren't being harsh enough.
That's a wonderful alternative that you offer us there. Thanks very much for taking the time to discuss this important issue with us.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
I've been talking with Ed Mead, a longtime political activist. He is the co-founder of Prison Legal News and the editor of two other magazines, Prison Art and Prison Focus.